Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, this is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
Two out of three ain't bad, Tampa Bay. How are you? Happy Black Friday. Has anybody wished anybody else a happy Black Friday? Is that a first? It could be right here on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, presented all season long by Bill Curry Ford. How's it going? How was your Thanksgiving? A happy belated Thanksgiving to all of you Lightning fans out there, or fans of other teams that just decide that they want to hear what's going on with the most exciting team in the NHL, the highest scoring team in the NHL, the Tampa Bay Lightning. I can understand that. Welcome aboard. We're thankful for your team to come to Amalie Arena and lose to us. Feel a little bit frisky on a Friday in Tallahassee, Florida, because, of course, Florida State, Florida this weekend on the gridiron. That's a noon kickoff tomorrow as I record this, Friday, November the 23rd. I'm not saying the Noles are going to win, but the Florida State does have a chance in this game. They're not as punchless as their 5-6 record would suggest, but we shall see. To more important matters, 6 points were available to the Tampa Bay Lightning between the last time we spoke and today. We procured 4 of them, and the results are kind of mixed here. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on the ups and downs. I'm going to take a general look at what's gone on the last week and give you a picture of where we are, who's playing well of late, and what we can project moving forward. Also going to do an exercise for Thanksgiving because, come on, aren't you in the spirit too? Most of you are probably off, so you're able to listen to this kind of live rather than after work or in the morning. I'm not off today because, obviously, like I said again, we have a big football game tomorrow. But at any rate, it's fun exercise that we did at the dinner table last night, courtesy of my sister, which is, what are you grateful for and what are you scared of? You go around the table and everybody says something that they're truly grateful for and then something that really freaks them out. I will apply it to the Tampa Bay Lightning and not keep it personal. So here we go. Saturday against the Philadelphia Flyers, rather, the hated Philadelphia Flyers, the Bolts race out to a 5-1 third period lead. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was not a lead we deserved. Philadelphia outplayed us for most of the game. They possessed the puck. It looked like, honestly, it was the dad's trip for the Lightning over the weekend. I think they joined the team on Friday in Philly. It looked like the players and the dads might have been out on the town in Philadelphia a little bit into the night, into Saturday morning. That was a 1 o'clock puck drop, and our legs weren't with it. I think the dads and the sons enjoy themselves, enjoy the company of each other. That's going to happen in an 82-game season. We talked about the Vegas flu, quote-unquote, a couple of weeks ago. I think the dad's trip had a little bit of that element to it because Philadelphia was skating circles around us, but Louis Domingue stood tall, made a ton of big saves in the first couple of periods, and then with what limited chances we got, we cashed in on more than Philadelphia did to pace ourselves to a 5-1 lead. We got our fourth and fifth goals via the power play. And the fans were booing in Philadelphia, as they do. That's just kind of like their standard setting. There's different shades of booing, but they were really angry at this one, angry at the officials, angry at life, angry that they're living in Philadelphia. And certainly they're angry at us that they were up 5-1. But to their credit, the Flyers came storming back, and they took advantage of a Lightning team that, again, really was never in the flow of it. And they score 4 friggin' goals in the third period. I mean, it was a total collapse. That building was rocking. Philly scores goal number 4 and 5 within seconds of each other. Wayne Simmons, ever the agitator, finishes it off and ties up the score from his backside. And next thing you know, you're wondering, there's a few minutes to go here. Are we going to walk out of this game up 5-1 on cruise control without even getting a single point? But the good news is we did get to overtime, and Anthony Cirelli takes care of it in overtime. The Bolts win 6-5, hopefully with a lesson learned. That was until Monday, and we traveled down to Nashville, a team that we absolutely dominated the first time we played, the West Coast leading Nashville Predators, weeks ago. And we couldn't come away with a victory. Pekka Rinne was outstanding, and even though the first period was played even, the second and thirds in that first game, we completely dominated. We just could not find the back of the net. It was very frustrating, but it's going to happen. In this game, we were dominated from the word go. We kept it within shouting distance, and then in the third, the final 20 minutes, we took over the game much like we did down in Tampa Bay. Chance after chance after chance. A beautiful two-man game between Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov put us on the board in the third to get it to within 3-2, and a barrage of chances down the stretch. Pecorine making a couple of saves, a defenseman with a block, and then with the net empty, we generated some chances. Nothing worked. A 3-2 loss that, frankly, we kind of deserved, especially given that we took two from Philly. But a heartbreaking loss nonetheless. And I hope, you know, we have a tendency to do this, and this is irresponsible on my part, and it's looking way too far into the future. But certainly one thing that our Bolts do is if they respect a goaltender, and a goaltender has had a lot of success against us in the past, we will overpass and be domed up the next time we face him. The only time we'd see Nashville from here on out would be the Stanley Cup Finals, so I'd like that challenge, but that's something I would circle. Here's a preview if that matchup ever happened months and months away. But we got to get there first. We took a good step as a team on Wednesday night against Florida, Marty St. Louis night, tip of the cap to the former Traitor, and now everything's A-OK again, Marty St. Louis. And Steven Stamkos played his best game that I've seen in a long, long time. Stamkos looked to me on Marty St. Louis night the way Marty St. Louis or Vinny LeCavalier would look when they visited Montreal. There was always something extra in their stride when we played at the former Molson Center and now the Bell Center. And Steven Stamkos was all over the ice, had the vision of a Marty St. Louis, had the patience to finish off as Rick Peckham called it, a no-doubter in front of the net, a loose puck, and he waited out Roberto Luongo before roofing it. But he was every bit the superstar-type player that I think he's overhyped as being, but largely is not. On this night, 91 was your guy, 100%. An impressive effort. He was everything that a captain should be, and hopefully that means that you see a little bit more of that Steven Stamkos moving forward. Now, Florida's a bit of a mess. I know they were coming in on some streaks, but they're last place in our division. Roberto Luongo is finally getting old. Speaking of goaltenders who have owned us over the years, thankfully that is finally happening, because if that guy doesn't turn into 45 save effort against us every time, he actually got pulled in this game. It was a friggin' miracle. So we pick up 4 out of 6 points. I feel mixed about us. Louis Domingue has given up some soft goals, and he's made some big saves. I think that's just going to be who we are and who he is until Andrei Vasilevskiy gets back. In a pinch, he's A-OK. Over the long haul, he'll make some big saves, but then he'll give up some easy goals. See the first goal that Florida scored in the game on Wednesday night. I mean, it goes right through the wickets. Come on, dude. You combine that with his effort a week ago that I talked about where he's not covering the puck in front of the net, and it looks like he, generally speaking, does not like to put his glove on the ice and cover the puck. I don't know if as a kid he got slashed in the hand or something, but he looks a little bit like Andrei Vasilevskiy is aggressive to freeze the play or to be involved in the play with covering the puck or handling the puck with his glove. Louis Domingue loves to play the puck the way Ben Bishop did with his stick, and he's pretty good at it. He's got good patience and timing for the most part. Goaltenders will always make mistakes here and there, but he's aggressive on that front. It's just, dude, you got to help out your defenseman at some point, and you got to help by covering that puck. So I think we're going to be a little bit inconsistent moving forward in terms of how many goals we give up, how many chances we give up. If you look at the shot board, it's mid-30s to the 40s the last 3 weeks. I think it was 45 against Philadelphia, another 40 saves for Domingue on Wednesday night, and then it was in the mid-30s before he was pulled late in the game on, what was that? Was that Monday? Late on Monday night. And, you know, I asked the question last week on the Joe Bolts Fan podcast. I asked it aloud. Who are we, defensively speaking, now that we need to protect a goaltender? Are we going to be responsible enough as 18 skaters to play as a unit to keep scores low enough to give ourselves a chance to win? And I think we've failed so far in that regard, even though we've won 2 out of 3. It's a development I want to continue to look at because things are fluid, but we're asking Louis Domingue to make too many big saves right now, and that's something that we certainly can tighten up. I wonder if a function of that was just being a little bit road weary. We shall see starting tonight when we play Chicago. But all in all, Stamkos is coming on. Another observation is Adam Ernie. I love this player. He was a big-time player for us up in Philadelphia, and then he scores a goal coming off the bench against Florida. You know, for a player who, if you're going to categorize him, is more of a grinder along the boards. He's a Ryan Callahan who can skate. That's who he projects to be. And by that, I mean he's got toughness. He's willing to play defensive minutes. I don't know that he's great in the faceoff circle, but he's a player that he's going to give you every ounce of grit that he has in him. Adam Ernie also has vision, and he's got a sense of the flow of the play and where to send a pass. Not on the level of a Jonathan Drouin, but it's just a very, very light version of that ability to kind of see the extra player available, the trailer, or the backdoor play that nobody expects, and so he can create an angle and backhand it across the ice, and he puts somebody in a big position to score. There was a moment last week where Nikita Kucherov, Adam Ernie sprung him, and Kucherov didn't expect the puck. You could tell that he knew who he was on the ice with in 73. Didn't think in a million years the puck would find him. It did, and Kucherov had a high percentage chance, wasn't able to cash in, but you could see the two of them as they were going to the bench together. Nikita nodded and said, "That's a hell of a play. I'm not going to get snuck up on again. You, sir, you've got a little something to you." And so I hope we see Adam Ernie a little bit more this season, but I get it. Like I said before when we were doing observations with him, we have a log jam of talent in the top six. Andre Palat, you know, is part of that mix too, and it feels like he's frozen out at times when he comes back and he's fully healthy. Adam Ernie, I think, is one of those pieces that as we get to 2019-2020 season, when we jettison Ryan Callahan before next year, he's going to be somebody you like to count on. He's also got a shot that's better than he gets credit for, a good snapshot/wrist shot. Good player there, and I really enjoy watching him play and grow in those third and fourth line minutes and then those little cameos he gets with the top forwards or power play number two. So that's about all I have in terms of the observations. After this break, and we're going to have a message from our friends at Bill Curry Ford, who, again, people, they are sponsoring Hockey Talk in Tampa, so embrace that. And if you're making a decision at the margin and Bill Curry Ford is right there, maybe you consider them. We'll have a message from them, and then we'll come back and do an exercise about things that I'm thankful for and things that freak me the hell out in the NHL. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network.
Bill Curry Ford is the proud presenter of the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. Come enjoy the Curry experience that has served the Tampa Bay community for 58 years. Their beautiful showroom is just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. New general manager Sean Sullivan, he's a Lightning fan, a Bucks fan, and he has great savings for the Tampa Bay community. Just go to the Bill Curry Ford website, BillCurryFord.com, shop and find their transparent pricing on all vehicles, and then contact Sean Sullivan and tell him you want the Joe Bolts Fan, Joe Bucks Fan discount. It's that simple. You will get an additional $500 in savings, no catch, no hook, and best of all, at Bill Curry Ford, they have nationwide lifetime warranties on new vehicles and pre-owned. That's just part of buying a vehicle at Bill Curry Ford. Check it out at their website, BillCurryFord.com.
Taking you higher than a Dave Mishkin go call. You're riding the Lightning on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
Back on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network. I appreciate your support. Appreciate you listening to this year's program. It is available to you, available, JoeBucksFan.com. Every week we post it on Fridays, as long as there aren't holidays or schedule snafus. And then also iTunes, Google Play. Those are the big two. We are there. Subscribe to us and set it and forget it. Now, to the thankful and fearful parts of the NHL season so far as we enter the weekend of November 23rd. Two things I'm grateful for, and one was on the heels of a trip I made 2 weeks ago up to Chicago. I did the Chicago to South Bend thing to cover Florida State as they got their asses handed to them by Notre Dame. But when I was up there, I had occasion to go to the Blackhawks Hurricanes game. And two thoughts that derive from that game, as well as watching some Rangers hockey with my girlfriend who is a Rangers fan. That's annoying, but at least we're better than them, right? So first of all, we'll go with the power play. I am grateful for the Lightning's power play. And for a few years in the Vinny LeCavalier, Marty St. Louis, Steven Stamkos era, or it might have been a season with him and then a season with St. Louis, LeCavalier, and Brad Richards. And then if you recall a couple of seasons ago, the power play was no bueno. You have talent galore, especially in the Vinny Stamkos days when we struggled. You have one of the top 10 players of all time who works the half wall that Vinny LeCavalier does. And for my money, you have one of the three best players who's ever been on the half wall where Steven Stamkos is. And somehow you couldn't make that work? That was really frustrating. There was so much skill on the ice, it felt like an all-star game would put less deserving players in that group of five than who we had when it was St. Louis, Stamkos, LeCavalier, or certainly when we put out Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, Braden Point, and Victor Hedman. And it's just a pleasure to watch this group move the puck around like they're the 1978 or 1980 Russian team. It is just, when you go watch other teams, like I watched Chicago play Carolina, and you see disjointed messes, and Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, Saad, those guys are on the ice. Those are super skilled players. And it is an absolute tire fire to watch their power play. To see the New York Rangers, another original six team that's had its share of stars over the years. I mean, my girlfriend and I have been together for a few years now. I watched it when they had St. Louis and Rick Nash, and McDonough might have been running the point here and there. They either had Zibanejad or Zuccarello. I mean, these are good players. And you see how hard it is for those teams to get set up in the offensive zone. You realize. And then I reflect on it and I think, I've been watching the game for, man, I'm getting old, probably about 25 years now, 24, 25 years. And this Tampa Bay Lightning power play that we've watched, the couple of little iterations when we had Kucherov and Tyler Johnson that were killing it in 2015, and Jonathan Drouin was doing some amazing things, especially in the playoff run in 2016. And then you look at the one now that we have with Stamkos, Kucherov, Hedman, Point, and Miller. That's the current power play line one, group of five. This is one of the best power plays I've ever seen in my life. I mean, consistently speaking, amazing plays, entertaining plays, a great understanding of spacing. They seem like if they can get set, you're going to get at least two grade A chances if you don't score on the first one. I can only think of two other power plays in history, in my history of watching the game, that have been as impressive as the one we're watching now. That would be two Penguins teams. The Penguins team that has been a dynasty of late. Crosby and Malkin and Phil Kessel. Good God, Kessel's annoying. That power play is just, wow. They happen to be our peers in the history of the game. And then the Pittsburgh Penguins power play with Lemieux and Jágr. Interchangeable parts over the years. Zubov, they had Straka, they had Robert Lang, among others. I think John Cullen in the early days. Those power plays, that power play in particular, in the mid to late 90s for the Pittsburgh Penguins, it was like an automatic goal. They would play five forwards at times. And I really have not seen one that is just as effortless as ours in forever. And so embrace this while we have it, because when we don't, guys, I mean, it's not going to be, it'll be like going from driving a Bentley to getting like a 1985 pre-owned Datsun. You know, bumpy ride. It's all over the road. It's loud as hell. You know, if you wanted to take a nap in the passenger seat, you don't have a fighting chance of doing that. We've got ourselves a sports car. We've got ourselves a luxury car all packed into one. So I'm very grateful for that. The second thing I'm grateful for is Amalie Arena. As crazy as that sounds, but Amalie Arena is just a phenomenal place. And you go to the United Center, and you see a place that houses so much history. I mean, the Blackhawks teams from the 90s, the Blackhawks teams from the past decade. obviously Michael Jordan and the Bulls and the six titles, and you see all these banners in the rafters, and that is supremely impressive, and it reminds you of so many things you watched as a kid, and you go, wow, it all happened in this building. This is, you could feel the living history of being in the United Center, and it's amazing. Outside of that, place is kind of a dump. I'm not kidding. It's the scoreboard is from the last time the Bulls won the NBA title. The seats, the concessions, the staff, it's second rate. It's not something you'd expect from an arena that has 82 home games between the hockey club and the NBA team, plus the playoffs that at least one of them seemingly is in all of the time. I was stunned to see how low-grade it is compared to Amalie Arena. And you think about a couple of things with Amalie. The ticket prices for Lightning games compared to big markets, much cheaper. The weather, of course, is much better. But it's a fan base that's an infant compared to Chicago or, let's say, Madison Square Garden. An arena, again, that has history, but, you know, is quirky and weird and built more for basketball than it is hockey. And, of course, the ice quality sucks there, too. It's just amazing to me that we have a first-class arena, a place that is very fitting to the eye, appealing to the eye, and one that has amenities of the 21st century, and yet it was built in the mid-90s. I'm just very thankful that we have a great place to watch the game of hockey. I'm thankful that we have a power play and a skill set, and we've been consistent since Steve Yzerman took this franchise over for, by and large, to be a playoff-type team, if not a contender for the Stanley Cup. I'm thankful for those two things. And then finally, the thing I'm fearful of is a big lead in the third period. If you haven't noticed this year in the NHL, no lead is safe. It really isn't. So we blow a 5-1 lead to Philadelphia this past weekend, and it was like nothing. I mean, they come all the way back, and there's still 3 minutes to go in this game. You could lose it outright. That did happen to Colorado when they were up in Calgary. They held a 3 or 4 goal lead. I think it was 4-1, but then they're up 5-2 as well. And Calgary comes all the way back in the third period to win that game, which is nuts. The game I went to for between Chicago and Carolina, that score is 4-5-0. It's at least 5-1. And then Chicago's got a chance in the final 90 seconds to tie that game. It's 5-4, all the momentum on the Blackhawks side. San Jose had Edmonton do it to him earlier this year. No lead is safe in the NHL. So I think you'll see a lot of lessons doled out to some younger teams, or to some teams that take their foot off the gas in the third period moving forward, that in this day and age of the NHL, you get a couple of power plays, you know, or you make a game 5-3. That 5-3 is as good as 2-1 was back in the 1990s. Games are that close and scoring is that high. For example, here's a crazy note from my friend Jeff Cameron across the glass at ESPN Tallahassee. You know, the Ottawa Senators, that's Guy Boucher's team, a team or a philosophy, if you're believing what Guy Boucher wants to believe, in the trap and playing boring hockey. We saw that, and that's what got us on the doorstep of a Stanley Cup final back in 2011. And it is a boring style of play, but effective. And yet, they play in high-scoring games every single night. They are not abiding by their own principles. Against the number, and this is a Vegas number, over-under, so that's a goal total between two teams on a given night, the Ottawa Senators hit the over. 17-4-1 is their record if you just bet the over all season long on the Ottawa Senators up to this point. Now, there may be a regression to the mean. This is not gambling advice by any means, but it tells you that if a team that's trying to play 1990-style trap is hitting the over on the goal lines at a rate of 17-4 with one tie, what is the NHL like? No lead is safe. Hide your kids, hide your wife. If you got a 4-1 lead in the third period, you better keep going. I don't want to hear any crybaby stuff from another coach about a team that doesn't take their foot off the gas and it's unprofessional. This is the NHL in the modern times. Goals come in bunches. Hope you enjoyed this Thanksgiving edition of the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast and a Black Friday. Maybe you made some deals, maybe you didn't. Maybe you're a Cyber Monday type person. Either way, we'll talk to you next week on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, and I hope your holiday weekend is fulfilling and warm, and I hope we see some more Lightning wins along the way. Thanks again to Bill Curry Ford, and we'll talk again next week.